Russia has reportedly been aggressively rearming the Syrian regime of Bashar al-Assad with flagrant air supply missions over Iraq and Syria in the past week. Those missions have been condemned by the U.S., as well as an apparent buildup of Russian military materiel in the Syrian city of Latakia. All that reported by our partner, the New York Times. And all this in advance of Russia taking over leadership of the United Nations Security Council this month, a Security Council stymied by Russian vetoes of resolutions attempting to stop the conflict in Syria. Karn Ross, former British diplomat, joins us now. Is this something that would be expected by Russia's President Putin to rattle the saber as Russia takes over the Security Council, or would this be just coincidence?
It's coincidence. I mean, Russia taking over the Security Council is merely a function of its place in the alphabet rather than any broader geopolitical significance. But the Putin's move in Syria seems to be more connected with asserting Russian influence in Syria, perhaps with, through the shifting dynamics of Iran's role, the U.S. role, greater U.S. interest in a no-fly zone, et cetera, et cetera.
And is there anything that Russia can do in the Security Council as leader of it that it wouldn't have been able to do with its veto power in the past?
No, it's easy to overestimate the importance of the Security Council presidency. It's more a technical role than a political role, though it does give you the power to control drafts when votes are taken, but it doesn't allow you to get decisions through the Security Council that you otherwise would not be able to.
There's been a broader discussion of how the United Nations in its conflict resolution function has been stymied continually, really since 2003, the invasion of Iraq, and accelerated with Russia's recent veto of the resolution talking about the massacre at Srebrenica in Bosnia. Is the conflict resolution Security Council function of the United Nations really in trouble right now compared with the humanitarian function of the UN, which seems to be working much, much more effectively on the ground?
The Security Council is only effective when the members of the Permanent Five agree on things. It's a kind of obvious thing to say, but it's an eternal truth of the Security Council. And over certain and the most important conflicts, in particular Syria, of course, the P5 and the Russians and the Americans in particular don't agree. So when that happens, the Security Council is not effective. It's not able to make decisions and it's not able to agree minimum steps such as an arms embargo on the regime, sanctions on the regime that is killing the most civilians, elementary measures to protect civilians in Syria. That's not happening.
Let's look at the deal with Iran that was negotiated by a group of nations, some in the Security Council, some not in the Security Council, and is also taking place outside of the normal channels of treaty ratification. Here in the United States, it's not even considered a treaty. It would seem that the diplomatic wheels are turning in very, very different ways in this century than we're accustomed to in the last century.
I don't know that that's true. I mean, what's extraordinary about the situation is, although we're facing turmoil and conflict all over the world, the major powers still see the United Nations and the Security Council as a place to discuss these crises and where they can agree action upon them. The Iran deal is somewhat sui generis. I think it's somewhat out of the mainstream of normal diplomatic business, partly because of the unique nature of the problem. In a sense, it's not really a formal diplomatic instrument like a treaty, which is multilateral, which involves many, if not all, states of the United Nations. It's only a small subgroup of states. So in that sense, it's unusual.
But can I press you on that? I mean, it would seem as though the same is true in North Korea, that the Security Council is not very effective in North Korea, and there are nations that are dealing independently with North Korea, and that we can't necessarily rely on the Security Council in that conflict. And NATO, of course, is as important as the United Nations as a peacekeeping function, and some would even dispute that.
Small group diplomacy has always been important, particularly in dealing with some of the most contentious and difficult issues. In the war in Yugoslavia, you had a small group of countries called the Contact Group, which tried to arbitrate the diplomacy and find a way forward in that conflict. Iran and indeed North Korea is similar. The UN Security Council is a pretty unwieldy body, even though it's 15 countries. Some of those countries are not, frankly, very important diplomatically. And it makes sense for smaller groups to try to thrash things out in private together. So, you know, for me, it's horses for courses. What is the best model what is the best form of diplomacy to address a particular issue. And usually that means getting together the countries with the most at stake in that issue. I don't love it because often it leads to very private, secretive, and therefore not necessarily effective diplomacy. I always prefer more transparency and more inclusion of those most affected.
Would reform of the Security Council process bring that kind of transparency, or should we just sort of let it kind of muddle on?
Well, it will muddle on because I think, I'm afraid, reform is unlikely as long as the permanent five veto-wielding members don't want it, and they don't particularly, despite protestations to the contrary by the Europeans in particular. But there are some reforms that actually are simple and don't require expansion of the membership or change to the veto. For instance, just making sure that the parties who are involved in a conflict are invited to address the Security Council whenever they discuss that conflict seems like a very basic, simple, and obvious thing to do, but I'm afraid it doesn't happen.
To go back to Putin for just one moment before we say goodbye to you. Karen Ross, do you think that Putin can accelerate his attempts to support the Syrian regime in Damascus at the same time as he maintains a war footing in Ukraine?
Well, the war in Ukraine seems, at the moment at least, to be dying down. What the Russians are up to in Syria is not entirely clear, but the Russians can't win the war for the regime. The Assad regime does not have the forces or the military effectiveness to control territory in Syria. And even if the Russians give them lots of air support, wars cannot be won solely from the air. So I don't see the Russian intervention in Syria as a game changer. And I think the thing that would change the game, however, is if the US and the West in general were to think about and set up a deterrent no-fly zone over Syria, which would, I think, change the calculations of the Syrian regime and force them at last to the table.
And get Putin's attention. Putin, who takes over leadership of the Security Council this month. Karen Ross, thanks so much.
Thank you.